This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. The complex political times continue in Washington this week, with the shadow of a Democratic filibuster looming over Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court. There's also news of revived talks of repealing the Affordable Care Act and more reported disclosures of connections between Russian officials and members of the Trump transition team.
Ron Elving is following all of these stories closely in his role as senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR. His long career in journalism started in Milwaukee, covering city, county, and state politics for the Milwaukee Journal. He was in town this week for a WUWM event and joined us in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you.
So let's talk about the here and now of the Trump presidency, or as here and now as we can talk ahead of the airing of this interview. As we're having this conversation, there are a lot of questions about the future of President Trump's pick for the open seat on the Supreme Court, and that's because Senate Democrats say they have enough votes to sustain a filibuster. What would Democrats hope to gain from filibustering this nomination?
They may not gain anything except the satisfaction of knowing they had done everything they could to stop a nominee they really believe may tilt the court in a direction away from their philosophy for the foreseeable future. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, inconceivable he could serve on the court even longer than that. So we have seen people serve into their 80s. It's quite possible Neil Gorsuch will be part of a conservative majority for the foreseeable future.
And this wins them political points largely with their base, right?
Yes, and that's quite important to Democrats who are running for re-election in 2018 or 2020. They need to keep their hardcore on their side. They need to keep their funders writing checks. And also they need to persuade people not to run against them in primaries. And I can think of at least one senator who was very concerned about having one or two primary opponents in 2018. He didn't need that. He wanted to have a clear shot at re-election. So that, I think, would have to be a pretty big thumb on the scale.
Well, but this is also a very calculated risk, right? Because by employing a filibuster here, it could goad Senate Republican leadership into deploying what people are calling the nuclear option.
Yes, and we expect that to happen. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has made it very clear he's prepared to do this. It would be extending a decision that the Democrats themselves made several years ago when they decided to rule out the filibuster for presidential appointments below the Supreme Court level. And now that's been applied to cabinet choices by President Trump. It's been applied to a number of federal judges at lower levels, circuit court level, district court level. So now it's just being extended, logically enough, to the Supreme Court, which was exempted when the Democrats did it. That was a sort of a bipartisan sort of gesture of, well, we'll allow filibusters for a Supreme Court justice. But unfortunately for the Democrats, they did not get the opportunity to serve in the majority while the president was still in office to appoint his choice for this seat, Merrick Garland, when it was vacated by the death of Antonin Scalia.
Well, and so there are some who say the strategy for Democrats ought to be not to filibuster this nomination, but rather to employ the filibuster for the next one that potentially comes down the road. What would the advantage be in doing that?
The theory being that Neil Gorsuch is an outstanding choice within the conservative world, that he is eminently well qualified, no one disputes that, and that it would make more sense, since he's obviously replacing a conservative in Scalia, it would make more sense to save the ultimate weapon for that moment when perhaps Ruth Bader Ginsburg or one of the other senior Democrats on the, or Democratic appointees, I should say, on the Supreme Court might retire. And that moment may not be that far in the future. There are several who are in their 70s and 80s. And so that could happen at any time. And perhaps that would be a more crucial moment at which to employ this strategy. But of course, if they waited, Mitch McConnell could just exercise the nuclear option then.
Right. So that raises the question of whether the filibuster is even an ultimate weapon if the nuclear option is sitting out there in any case.
That is correct. But the philosophy, if you will, the mood, the atmosphere of the Senate has changed in recent years, not all at once, but progressively. And that change has made the Senate a much less cooperative place, a much less chummy, clubby place. And the sort of partisanship that we've always associated with the House has really infiltrated the Senate, along with a lot of people who had served in the House.
So at the same time, is there a political risk for the Republicans if they employ the nuclear option?
Perhaps. Some thought that a year ago when the Republicans refused to even consider or have a process for Merrick Garland, who was himself quite a moderate choice for Barack Obama, much more so than his other appointments to the Supreme Court, it was thought that the Republicans might pay a price for that, that they would seem overly partisan and harsh in just totally ignoring the man and not even giving him a hearing when, after all, President Obama was very much the president when he appointed him.
So the other story making headlines, or another story making headlines, there are really so many stories making headlines right now, but is the reemergence of the effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The Trump administration was openly critical of the more conservative faction in the Republican Party for its opposition to the bill that was on the floor and then was pulled from the floor. What do you make of these apparently rekindled talks?
The president has threatened several members of the House Freedom Caucus, which is the most hardcore conservative group, by name in his Twitter account, saying that they would come after them, maybe have people run against them in the primaries. That's a potent threat. Also, obviously, this president is very popular within the Republican base, so it is high pressure on the House Freedom Caucus to have the president so exercised with them, and he is going to force them, I think, to make a really tough decision. And so that's why they're talking to him again. How well those talks are going, we don't know yet, but at least they have been forced back into a conversation.
And what sounds like the difference this time around is that there is an effort to scrap, or at least partly scrap, one of the most popular provisions of the ACA, the coverage of pre-existing conditions. How is that likely to work from a political standpoint?
It would seem that that would make the bill all the more unacceptable in the Senate, where it has been declared dead on arrival if it should ever arrive there, and it hasn't yet. But the Senate, even though it is Republican-controlled, is much more closely divided, and the loss of three Republicans on the bill would mean that it could not pass. Again, as long as we have the filibuster for legislation, they really need more than a simple majority in the Senate. So if they're going to pull over any Democrats and hold all their Republicans, they can't be messing with the most popular things in Obamacare. Maybe Obamacare isn't popular, but the idea that you can't be denied insurance for a pre-existing condition and that you can keep your kids on your policy until they're 26, those are quite popular.
So we've talked about the Supreme Court nomination. We've talked about the Affordable Care Act. How might these two issues and others down the road might be impacted by the ongoing Russia scandal?
The Russia scandal undermines the president's general authority and also the expectation that he's going to be the president for four full years. Now, I think you have to get out to the fringes of the Democratic Party or to some kinds of liberal media before you find people who seriously think that the president is any danger of serving a full term. But because there is even that discussion so early in a presidency, that gives a certain amount of indication of how seriously people take these allegations of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians who were trying to interfere in our election.
Are there any indications that it's having any impact on their ability to gather Republican votes where they're needed?
If the president were at 60% approval, as most new presidents are well over 50% approval, if he were up there, the pressure that he is bringing to bear now on the House Freedom Caucus and on others would be all the greater and perhaps irresistible. But the fact that he is somewhat less than as popular one would expect a president to be at this point, that gives a little bit more leeway to an individual member of the House who may feel his own or her own popularity is much greater than the president's back in the home district and that they shouldn't feel in any sense endangered by his disapproval.
You got your start in this business here in Milwaukee in the wake of Watergate, and that was an essentially unprecedented time in Washington, save for maybe the Andrew Johnson administration, which neither of us remembers all that well.
Thank you.
And yet this current situation seems to set a whole new unprecedented standard. Can you talk about the challenges of providing context for such a breathtaking period in our political and social history?
Well, one challenge in it that I actually appreciate is the chance to talk about history. It was 40 years ago this month that I got my job offer from the Milwaukee Journal when it was a separate paper from the Sentinel. And yes, at that time, people had a certain attitude towards Washington, and it was a highly partisan attitude. And we have had in the four decades since a certain amount of back and forth in terms of more and less partisan eras. It sometimes depends less on the party of the president than on the personality of the president. But in this particular moment, things had reached a brackishly hostile partisan low point in Washington before Donald Trump came along. Donald Trump was aided in many respects by that negative atmosphere, and he has promised to cure it one way or another, drain the swamp and so on, and perhaps he will. But thus far, at least, the effect of his presidency has been to make it all a little bit worse.
Ron Elving, thanks for your work in the swamp.
Thank you, Mitch. Pleasure to be with you.
Ron Elving is senior editor and correspondent for the Washington Desk at NPR. He was in town this week to speak at WUWM's Morrow event.